The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. How is everybody doing? All right, I got to get that story here. Here it is. Facebook is facing a backlash because of the Cambridge Analytics and, you know, amassing the information and 50 million of its users and all that stuff. But, even more... They know, or they think they know, whether you're liberal or conservative. They actually have monitored, and you can find out. They're not hiding it.
Mm-hmm. And you can edit it if they're wrong.
Oh, you can edit it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just looked at it on my phone. I didn't see if I could edit it.
Yeah, you can edit it.
So you can edit it.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder how that will change.
I'm curious to see how many they have wrong.
But it's hidden in plain sight. All you do is go to Add Preferences,
mm-hmm.
and there's a section called Your Information.
Yeah.
And you
click. Comes up under Contact and Basic Info.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you go to Your Information. If you click on that tab, you'll see an option for your categories, which contains a section called U.S. Politics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, Facebook will have you labeled as very liberal, liberal, moderate, conservative, or very conservative.
Mm-hmm. Extremely conservative.
Now, I came up as conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe my libertarian. Well, I don't know how they would figure out what I was on my personal Facebook page.
Yeah.
We're real, unless they're monitoring the stories that I actually click on.
Right.
And mm-hmm. and the fact that a lot of the media that I subscribe to.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I subscribe to CBS, I subscribe to NBC, I subscribe to CNN and
Diane Feinstein being too far right, then CBS and MSNBC are too far right.
We're looking at.
We do have to judge it by March, end of March 2018 standards.
The social network says it fills up these categories based on information you've provided on Facebook and other activity.
Mm-hmm. And other activity.
Well, probably since the, it says Job Red Eye Radio.
Well, there's that. Oh. Dang it. They know.
That might be.
It's not like we're broadcasting this show or anything. Yeah.
You know, sometimes it is amazing because you sit in here in the studio and you do it every day and you go out somewhere and someone says something to you. Really? Where'd you hear that? You said it on the radio last night, idiot. Oh, that's right. I do a radio show.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
I forget. Sometimes a person or two will listen. Right?
Oh, somebody's actually listening. I think I'm just in this little box talking to Eric.
Then it goes, man, what's wrong with you that you would listen to me? what is going on in your life?
Seriously. So you can actually look it up to see what they think you are.
Yeah.
And by the way, you don't have to sign in. It's not like those little things. So, are you really a conservative?
Yeah, right.
Fill this out here, and then and some of those, that is how they got your information to begin with. And mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever done that. Facebook?
No.
Or I've had to sign in after being in Facebook, sign in to something else. It's something that's a post. I don't think I've ever done that. I have no interest in those surveys to begin with, though. None.
No. No.
What does this say about your personality?
Yeah, no, I don't.
I don't care.
Seriously, I know all I need to know about my personality. if you like this kind of salad dressing, it we can tell what kind of person you are by the salad dressing you choose.
I have no interest in those things, you know, to begin with.
I don't care. I don't care. I know everything I need to know about me.
Someone can get your public, not your private, but your public information that you put on Facebook. Yeah. No blank, Sherlock.
Yeah.
We do a radio show on over 200 radio stations across the United States. Not really worried about that.
Nope.
So
they can judge your political views. Yeah, I got other problems.
I got one Facebook friend yesterday. Actually a radio guy, but not in talk radio. That said, that's it. I'm done. I'm off for a while. And then he took his profile picture off and said, I need to get off for a while because of, you know, he posted something that was political. He's posted, you know what he did? He posted, did you see the meme going around some of the founding fathers who were very young at that time?
Mm.
These young people founded the country.
Mm.
And I responded to him. I said, yeah, but they trusted themselves with guns. I just said something. Sorry. And he liked it. But apparently, I believe that's the one that just went off the rails for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, then don't post it. If you post something on Facebook that's political and a meme that can be taken a number of ways, expect people to take it in a number of ways.
Well, I saw something where, you know, this person is receiving backlash because of backlash. You mean they posted something on social media and other people responded? How dare they respond?
They were bullied.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Catching a lot of heat for saying, you mean other people on Twitter reacted to someone's post?
Now that's news.
I know. It boggles the mind sometimes why that would be a story.
It's one thing if
they say something stupid and all of Twitter just starts, because Twitchy, which is basically kind of it's a conservative bent on social media. It tells you like when a liberal will, you know, post something and then all of a sudden people start calling them out on it. It's really great because you see the conversations and points being made.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what Twitchy actually is designed to do. That's what they do, is basically go on that social media from a conservative perspective.
And cover what
liberals are doing and how conservatives come back and defeat arguments.
So they're the so they're the catalyst for social media crises.
Exactly. Yeah, like we said, there's only one guy having social media crisis. His name is Zuckerberg.
By the way, that term, you had to be listening yesterday's show. I was watching the golf last week, and they were talking about one of the, I don't know what player it was, talking about one of the players, and they said, yeah, and you know, and he had to change his swing, and he had problems with his swing, and then he had to fire his caddy, and that wasn't working out, and then he had a social media crisis. I burst out laughing. And they didn't explain what it was, because that social media crisis, and I didn't hear about it. I didn't know what it was, and I can't remember who the golfer was. I just burst out laughing. Now, I don't know if it was the guy who fired his caddy. I was just giving you a number of things that they were bringing up, and the last one was, and then there was that social media crisis. Really?
Are you kidding me? Really?
That's a crisis?
Really? You know, the stuff that came out over the weekend, and Facebook had to acknowledge it for Android users, and what they were doing, they were uploading logs from call logs and text logs from Android devices. Now, they said, you know, that, well, we were actually, you have a permission setting that allows Facebook to access that information. And said, so it technically was with permission. Well, yeah, right. Everybody reads the agreement every time. I'm not discarding that. If you click the button or you click the check in the box, then great, you own that, no doubt. But Facebook still collecting that data, that text log, that phone call log. You're not going to win that. Doesn't matter what agreement was in place between you and the user.
Well, you know, we may think it means nothing, but part of the reason the stock market went down yesterday is now the fear of government regulation.
Right.
Of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the reason the stock market went down yesterday.
And I suspect there will be some kind of regulation.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, what your point is about doesn't matter whether the agreement, whether it in this argument, it doesn't matter whether you legally signed it or not. It does
right.
legally.
Right.
Whether you
yes,
agreed to
right.
it. But in the public opinion
right.
is going to be against it.
Right. Yeah. In that court,
well,
you will lose all day.
Right. Because that's sort of the ultimate where the American people say, well, I'm not expected to read the entire contract, am I?
Well, and case in point, look at all the people who posted. I hereby do not give Facebook to you. Sorry.
Yeah.
You've already done that.
I haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah. And that happens, you know, two or three times. It would be, you know, people would post those things. It seemed like to be a trend. There would be a trend every, you know, couple of years. I don't give them permission. Yeah, actually, you legally did. You actually did do that by signing up for Facebook. Now, there are certain permission settings you can go in and you can change.
Right.
So, but by participating on their website, then that's the legal argument. The court of public opinion argument, no.
Let's start a new rumor.
Hmm. Zuckerberg is the devil?
No.
Oh.
Because
I started that one a couple hours ago.
Because of all the possible regulations coming up, now Facebook is thinking of charging $1 a month.
Right. Would you pay $1 a month?
Would you pay $1 a month
for Facebook?
That
actually has come up in posts before. Would you actually pay to stay on Facebook? No. As Facebook will be aging out, I mean, and they're already seeing the demographics, you know, there. They want more young people. They even have, you know, and it used to be it was skewing older and older, and then they have a threshold there. Because you get to that age, and I think I'm past it, where you're like, yeah, no, I really don't. Because with me, it's about family.
Well,
I've got some close friends,
well,
a handful of close friends,
well,
but I really don't participate much on Facebook.
No, but that's really it. When you think about it, Facebook has become a thing where the older generation who has a history of their lives are posting pictures of their lives with other members of their families and friends,
mm-hmm.
and keeping in contact and talking about all the good old days, and here's our high school reunion,
right.
and here's our college reunion. That if you're somebody who doesn't have a history in life and you're only 20,
yeah,
well, you don't want to be on Facebook. It's for old people.
Well, there's that, and then there's the other side of that, again, where the upper end kind of, there's that threshold, and there's drop-off at a certain age.
Death.
And in certain, you know, and it starts to die off. The thing that now I have with my sister and my brothers, we do a group text. And we can share photos, we can all comment, and it's the same thing. With my granddaughters, their generation, the oldest will be 13 in June. Facebook's not even a concern. It's completely not even a thought.
You know,
Twitter really isn't either. For them, it's like Google Hangouts and other things where they can actually, they can, you know, have FaceTime with friends on their tablet or their phone, in group mode where, you know, it might be two or three of them on, and the parents know exactly who's on. It's not like you've got hundreds of friends on your account,
right,
at any given time. So it's more direct.
Well, what I loved is when I got irked when it probably goes back about 6 months ago, and let me check LinkedIn. And also I started seeing political posts on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what LinkedIn's for. It's like, it can be whatever you want it to be, but you know, that's what it was set up basically to be, a networking site, professional networking site.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden politics has creeped into LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, wasn't supposed to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's everywhere, no doubt.
Oh, I know. It will be. I mean, that's a natural progression. But I was just amazed that I was irked by it.
Yeah.
I don't like this. All right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Vehicle maintenance tips from J.J. Keller. Your day should begin and end with thorough daily vehicle inspections. You must inspect the same minimum elements during both your pre-trip and post-trip inspections, including service brakes, parking brake, steering mechanism, lights and reflectors, tires, horn, windshield wipers, rear vision mirror, coupling devices, wheels and rims, and emergency equipment. At the end of each workday, you must complete and sign a written post-trip inspection report if you operate a property carrying vehicle and have a defect to report. Identify problems you found en route, such as unusual noises, smells, or vibrations. Before each trip, you must be sure the vehicle is in safe operating condition by walking around the rig and looking over the last post-trip inspection report, if one was generated. Review and sign the report if the noted problems were corrected. Some on-the-road inspections are required, but a quick overall look at your vehicle anytime you're stopped is a good idea. This tip brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This maintenance tip is a service of Valvoline HD. When the going gets tough, you need a motor oil you can count on.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Early in the show, we talked about the media picking up now about Obamacare, since that wasn't dealt with in the spending bill, that premiums are going to skyrocket unless the Republicans or the states figure out something to do. So we got into that discussion. Felix in Nashville wanting to talk about it. Felix, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. I'm like you. I believe in the free market. I think that would be the best system for our health care in this country. What I've thought about that concerns me is, let's say that you were able to put it in tomorrow, a free market system. What would concern me is it seems like it may take, I don't know, 2 or 3 years or so to for it to really kick in. And I wonder if the electorate in this country would be willing to give it a chance to work. I think it's the best way, but that sort of concerns me.
I would guess no. And the reason I would guess no is because they couldn't really get rid. The public opinion did not want to get rid of the benefits of Obamacare.
Right.
They didn't want those to be touched. So in order to change the system, you're going to have to get rid of the current benefits that are held and come up with a different system. And it didn't seem. I could be wrong, but the polls all showed an increasing number of Republicans didn't want the benefits to go, just the mandates, just the things that might cost them money.
Right.
The what?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right on that.
Oh, okay.
A couple other quick points. I know this will sound like I'm making excuses for President Trump, but it does seem like when he was elected, he was an outsider, and it seems like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell should have spent a little more time helping him, you know, get broken into this. And I just don't think they care. I don't think they care whether he wins or loses, as long as they, you know, their particular places, they get reelected. I don't think that matters one way or another. I mean, where is Paul? Where is Mitch McConnell?
Well, Mitch McConnell has been more of a, he's been around longer, but I also think that you can look at him and say you're not surprised by it. Some of the things about Paul Ryan, to me, are a little bit surprising.
Right.
That he would be so easily behind such a big spending bill to begin with. But of course, I don't think any politician cares more about anybody else's success except their own first.
Right. Yeah, you can say that across the board.
Yeah, they want to get reelected. So I'd say across the board that you would find that.
Sure.
Dear.
They live the life. They walk the walk. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome. Hi, how's everybody doing? Good news.
What?
U.S. total energy exports hit a record high in 2017 when measured in British thermal units.
BTUs.
Mm-hmm. Now, British thermal units, just so people don't know, is the amount of heat and energy it takes to heat 1 pound of water 1 degree Fahrenheit. Mm. Just so everybody knows. That's, you know how I know that? My dad, we used to go camping, and it would be, you know, this propane stove is whatever, you know, BTUs. And everything was BTUs. This air conditioner is BTU, BTU, B. I was like, what does that mean? So my dad pounded that into me as a kid. So I don't know anything else about weights and measures.
It's the amount of energy required to...
The amount of energy required to heat 1 pound of water, 1 degree.
1 pound?
1 pound.
Hmm. Yes. Interesting.
So, there you go.
Okay. And now, is that a British pound? It is a British thermal unit. I prefer American thermal units.
See, I never asked that question.
Freedom thermal units. Freedom. Liberty thermal. Okay, I can end there.
So U.S. total energy exports hit a record high in 2017 when measured in British thermal units, BTUs, according to the monthly energy review released today by the Energy Information Administration, which is part of the U.S. Department of Energy. U.S. petroleum and natural gas exports, measured in BTU, also both hit all-time highs in 2017. While the U.S. energy trade deficit hit a 20-year low. I've just got to say this for the heck of it, all right? If you don't have to understand it, because, frankly, none of us do. During 2017, total U.S. energy exports equaled 17.998711 quadrillion BTUs. So now that you all fully have a clear understanding of it, as I do, as exactly what that amount is.
We are boiling the daylights out of some British water, I'll tell you that right now.
So,
all right then.
There you go. We're still a net importer.
Hmm. Yeah, right.
Of 7.3 quadrillion BTUs.
Hmm.
But our exports have hit a record high. Well, the thing is, it's funny because we're exporting and we're importing.
Right. Yes.
We're doing both, depending on the grades or whatever. You know, we talked about finished refined products, whatever. So, and that's the whole point. Even on something as simple as energy and oil, you import and you export,
right? Raw and both refined,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's good.
Well, yeah, I mean, we want the world to be our customer. We absolutely want, you know, to create, again, expand more wealth here in the U.S. That was the idea behind allowing the raw crude exports. Now that we know what's available in the fields in the U.S., what we have available to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the OPEC member nations, they don't get the standing they used to get. Back when Ahmadinejad was in charge in Iran, saying something in the news doesn't necessarily send the markets reeling like it used to.
In other news out of California, officials in California's Orange County voted yesterday to join a lawsuit from the Trump administration fighting the state sanctuary city laws hours after the county sheriff's department announced its own methods of pushing back against the legislation aimed at protecting illegal immigrants. Then the California attorney general came out and could not rule out taking action against his own officials who fight the state laws, including the sheriff. This is going to be good. This is really going to be good right now, because this is something that's going to go through the courts and to the federal courts. Because you have a state saying you can't cooperate, and a city and a county saying Oh, no, we want to cooperate.
Right. This will be an interesting argument.
We want to cooperate with the federal government. The mm-hmm. state does not. Here's... I just thought of a campaign slogan. Are we California or American citizens first?
Ooh, that's a good... That's... If you pose that question, if you took that survey in California, I wonder yes. what it would... I wonder what the
Because this is what it, it's be. What it's coming down to, right?
Sure.
Is it not?
Sure.
California Attorney General said, state law is state law. It's my job to enforce state law, and I will do so. We want to make sure that every jurisdiction, including Orange County, understands that state law requires of the people and of the subdivisions of the state of California.
Hmm.
When asked if that meant an arrest or lawsuit against the sheriff, he responded, I think I just answered that.
Which is yes.
Which would be a yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So now let's extrapolate that out to a sheriff then working with ICE, going out of the way to work with ICE.
Yeah.
And then that sheriff being arrested because state officials would arrest the sheriff. He just said it.
Yep.
So you would have someone in jail for violating a state law which prohibits them
from cooperating with
federal officials in the interest of public safety. Wow.
I know. and this was the Orange County Sheriff's Department is, as of Monday, the Orange County Sheriff's Department online inmate database includes a date and time of a prisoner's release, a change that agency officials say will improve communication with law enforcement partners. You'll know that. You go to the database, you'll know when they're going to be released. Boom, you can.
So, here's the question then.
While the database will include release dates of all inmates, not just for illegal immigrants, the newly public information is aimed at helping Immigration and Customs Enforcement take removable criminal aliens into custody after they serve local jail time. You know what it is? Think about this. Whether it's this here.
Now, is the database public? I mean, can anyone access that? Or is it only available to authorities?
I don't know.
Because, if it were a public notification, is that necessarily skirting the law?
Well, no, or breaking the law? I'm assuming a database... I don't know. I don't know if it's a database that only law enforcement can get into. What you're stating is if it was a database where everybody would get into, then the Freedom of Information Law, the Freedom of Information Law is actually based on the fact that you can get a copy of something that may not be public.
Right.
But if you're giving it free access to everybody,
essentially a public notice.
It's a public notice, not just a law enforcement notice. That's a good point. I don't know whether it is or not. I don't know if that's open.
Well,
to the public.
And even if it was shared with any agency, not necessarily specific to federal enforcement agencies.
Well, if it's an online inmate database,
mm-hmm. and you can actually. I mean,
then if it's online, it means it's available to everybody. That's what online means.
And you can actually an inmate search. You can. Pretty much go to any jurisdiction.
So you're telling me, but you think about this now. They're basically stating we as a state are going to limit information.
Because that's what would have to be done in order to enforce this. They would have to go after the county then for sharing that information. But if that information is shared with the public, ICE just happens to get hold of it.
Whether it's the census,
mm-hmm.
it's the left stating the fact that we wish to keep certain information away from the public.
Yes, but use it to our benefit.
Right. in order to use it for our benefit, we wish to keep information and ban getting the full truth out there to everybody. Because right. that's when you take everything else out, you whittle everything else out, that's what it is. The left is basically saying, if you look at the census, you look at this, that we do not want accurate information given to the public and to the federal government.
Right. Because the only thing I could see here changing in this database in this county, in Orange County, would be what? The legal status of any inmate. I mean, I don't know, because if it is essentially an online public notice accessible to anyone, or even just accessible to any agency, not specific, directed, targeted sharing with ICE, because that would be more of a deliberate act. I'm talking about the way the law is written in California, the state law.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see this, if this is even just, it's a database that any agency, enforcement agency within any jurisdiction can get access to, then it's not cooperation. It's just a notice, or on the grander scale, a public notice.
Well, that's the whole point. It seems to be a public notice is what they're putting out there, and what the state of California is saying, you can't even do a public notice. And they're saying, we're including all of our inmates.
Mm-hmm. Right. See, if it's not targeted,
this is all.
It's just simple,
this is
broad information.
And California's saying, nope, can't do it, because that is essence, because you have illegal immigrants in there. That is helping the federal government know where our illegal... Think about how far they will go to hide illegal immigrant criminals. Think about this, state of California.
Yes.
Think about this, people of America.
Because you would essentially then have to limit public information. Because if it's public information, that means ICE or any other federal agency can use that information, and thereby that constitutes cooperating and breaks the state law.
Thumbs up to Orange County and the sheriff's department and the sheriff for doing this.
Yeah,
because you know, that's basically what you're getting out of this is the intent of the government.
Mm-hmm.
The government doesn't care about the citizens of California,
right?
Because here specifically what they're doing, and this is why it's important, whether it's, you know, former Justice Stevens talking about, you know, the Second Amendment. It's very important to understand where they really want to go. You know, there's all this thing, oh, you're just being paranoid about this. They just want to protect. No, they wish to protect the illegal immigrant criminal.
Yes.
That's what they're doing. In this specific case, you can't even make up, well, you know, when you have a sweep of going after illegal immigrant criminals, just some illegal immigrants who haven't committed a crime outside of being in the country illegally are also swept up, and that's unfair. That's not even the case here. This is a case of protecting illegal immigrant criminals.
Yes.
There is no other way to look at it.
No.
They don't care about the citizens of California and your safety and security. They care more about the illegal immigrant criminals.
Well, what's
next?
That's
the beauty of this, is that's what the sheriff's department has made clear.
And what's next? You limit all public information? Because what's the idea behind public information in terms of any case or charge against
safety.
A person?
Safety.
It's about safety. It's about safety. So are you going to start then limiting the court records? Are you going to start, or are you going to say it's no longer available online? Because what's the most efficient way? Back in the day, you had to go downtown. You had to go to the county courthouse. You actually had to search the records yourself, you had to make a phone call.
A HIPAA law for criminals in California.
Seriously. I mean, because how far are they willing to go?
They were convicted of something, but we can't tell you because of privacy rights.
And we can't tell you who they are.
Right. Can't tell you who they are or what they are. They're criminal X.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
And It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Kim Jong-un's meeting in China.
In fact,
maybe some breaking news?
Reuters is reporting that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has pledged to denuclearize and meet U.S. officials. This coming from China. They said this today after a meeting. There was rumor that Kim Jong-un had traveled outside of North Korea and was possibly in China.
Right.
They confirmed that that meeting did take place. And so the president, Xi Jinping of China, apparently met with Kim Jong-un. And he's promising, according to China, he's promising to do away with his nukes. China sent a message to the White House, which included a personal message from President Xi to President Trump, confirming the meeting. And they also say that it looks like the meeting between Kim Jong-un and Trump could happen in May.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, in the news today, we're talking about stock market going down yesterday, the worry about regulation on tech companies and, you know, Facebook and things like that. So, and we talk about the fact that, you know, the contracts that we sign, the public information that is given away. But what about private information that we're so willing to give away? Forbes had the story yesterday. When you think of victims of financial scams, most of us think of the elderly, right?
Mm.
Wrong. That may not be the case. Recent study by First Orion, a provider of data and phone call transparency solutions, indicates that millennials are most affected by phone scams.
Really?
Following a survey of 1,000 mobile phone users in the United States, First Orion found that millennials are particularly susceptible to phone scams. Millennials were 6 times more likely than baby boomers to disclose personal information over the phone if the caller could verify the last 4 digits of their Social Security number. Phone scammers often use tidbits of personal information that they've gleaned from other sources, like stolen data, to try to coax more information out of you. It works. Nearly 3 times as many millennials gave away their entire Social Security number over the phone compared to Gen X respondents.
Wow.
And for us, you know, you think about it, somebody, I have the last 4 digits of your Social Security number. Would you give me the entire one? What, are you out of your mind?
Or this way. Because you can buy the database, or the black market that has the final four or the last four numbers.
Right.
You get that part of it, and then you ask the person, and the scammer asks the person on the phone, "I need just the first 5 numbers. Don't give me the last four.
Right.
Just the first 5.
Yes.
Because they already have the last four.
Yeah.
Now they've got your social, and you don't know it.
I don't know you. You're not getting it. This is your bank calling you. No, my bank would never call me for that.
Well, and that's the thing is that they don't, you know, most, like the IRS said, we don't make phone calls. There's a lot of scams going on this time of year, especially that where someone poses as an IRS agent, you need to pay the taxes that you owe now, or a new one that came about in the last couple of years, where they actually file for you. I don't know how they're getting this done. They file in your name. It goes to your bank account. Then they call you and say, "This is the IRS. We made a deposit that's not supposed to be your deposit." I don't know how they're getting that done. That's a massive set of hoops they're having to jump through to get all of that done. And what they say is, we need you to transfer this out, this money that was deposited into your account from the IRS. It's not yours. We need you to pay it right away, pay it back. Now, think of that entire chain of events leading up to that, what it would take to get all that done. The scammers are very, very sophisticated.
Yeah, IRS on the phone, you know, it's not the IRS.
They don't call. Right. They don't make calls.
Right.
They send you a letter.
Right. Now, you can call them.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And a particular person will call you back.
Mm-hmm.
That I've done that before. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'll never forget that day when I went home and I saw the thick letter from the IRS.
Oh, yeah.
It was thick.
Yeah. Did you start sweating? I start sweating just opening it.
Well, I opened it up standing. I lived in a townhouse at the time, so it was the mail area.
Right.
So I ripped it right open there. I mean, I didn't even close my little mailbox. And the only thing I'm looking for is the amount.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like $6,700 that I owed them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went. And I saw 5,000 of it was a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had owed over 1,000, they tacked on a $5,000 penalty.
Mm.
Well, let's put it this way. I went home, and I was, at that time, I was doing an afternoon show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd come home from doing my afternoon show, and so it was probably 6:30 at night. By about at 10 o'clock at night, I had figured out everything that it was. I had simply put something on the wrong line, and it was added wrong, and I didn't owe them $100.
Right.
But I wanted to call them right then. I wanted to solve it. I mean, you don't even want to wait one day.
Right.
It's the IRS.
Right.
But my living room, if you would have walked in, you would have thought that burglars came in and ransacked the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were papers all over the... I was just thinking, let me get this.
Right.
Receipt back then. This was even, before I was doing everything online. And so I'll never forget, I called them the next morning, and the woman was extremely nice. And I told her to her, and she said, let me check. She came back 30 seconds later, and she says, look, you're fine. And I said, well, yeah, but I'm looking at this here. And I said, I'm going to send everything to you directly. And of course, get the receipt and everything else from the IRS. And she said, fine. And well, first she said, no, you don't have to do that. I've corrected it here. And I said, doesn't matter. It says that if I don't respond by a letter within a certain number of days, then I'm admitting that I owe that amount. And I just said, she goes, no, but you really don't. And what I found out later from a lawyer was you don't actually owe that. Hmm. You only owe what you owe. The IRS can't even make that threat against you, which, by the way, ticked me off that the government would do that to begin with.
Right.
And the tax lawyer said, no, you don't. You only owe what you owe. If you don't owe it, they can't say if you don't respond within 30 days, you then owe it.
Right.
They can't. You haven't agreed to that. There's no agreement on that. But I didn't know it. So I sent one to her, and then I made a general copy and sent two of them separate to the general IRS just to make sure. And had the receipts, the mail receipts and everything else. And
mm-hmm.
It was fine. Nothing ever happened. I didn't owe them. And they sent me the letter that everything was cool. And
yeah.
But still, it took me most of the next day putting together, all those two reports and making sure everything was written properly, just because you didn't want to go through it again.
Well, I had a situation where somebody else was doing, I hired a guy to do my taxes. And he put something on the wrong line. And so I actually owed $300 and something more than what was figured, and so they added a 10% penalty onto that. So it was like the penalty was $33 plus the extra $300 that I owed. And it said, just make a copy of this letter, put it with the check, and send it immediately. But you start sweating. I do.
Oh,
it's the only time I've ever received anything from the IRS of that nature.
I did receive something back in 1985. Where I'm not kidding. I owed them, somehow there was a miscalculation. I owed them $1.02.
Right. Well, you got to pay it. And they just spent about $200 in resources and letting you know you owe $1 and two.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I had to pay $1 and two.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even, you know, I didn't even go to check to see whether it was right or not.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm not going
it's
to
dollar
bother.
Two.
For
yeah.
$1.02,
right.
I'm not going to get into any type of arguments.
Right.
I'm going to pay the $1 and
I
two.
Wasn't over, I didn't even, when I went back, I knew, I said, look, I can correct this later, right now, because it says you need to respond by this date or there could be further penalties applied. And that they can do.
Yes.
If you don't respond to them, they can tack on penalties in terms of what you owe in income tax. That's that they can't change that amount. So I was like, nope, this is going in the mail. I drove it that day. Same day I got it. I drove it to, well, I wanted to get a, I wanted to, you know, send it certified so somebody would sign for it to show that it was delivered. I wanted to make sure,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so it was, you know, no big deal, but I drove it straight to the post office that day.
Yeah, I, like I said, that was, and that probably goes back about 17 years ago, I think, when that happened to me. And it was just pure, you know, pure panic when you get that big envelope. It's like, I just don't need that
yeah,
big envelope.
Right, exactly.
So, all right.
Yeah.
A ton more coming up here. A ton.
Yeah, including
a British thermal unit coming up.
No. British thermal unit
that's
worth
last
of
hour.
Knowledge and information. including North Korea.
Yeah, the
China.
Whole North Korea, the latest breaking news from North Korea. Maybe breaking news from North Korea. It's, you never know with
well,
Kim Jong-un.
It's, you know, the China issued a statement. And yes, will it actually be what they're saying it is? But there certainly was a historic meeting between the president of China and Kim Jong-un. The first time, I don't know, when's the last time Kim Jong-un left North Korea? Right.
Well, his surrogates do to assassinate brothers.
Yes, his assassins
like that.
Do.
Yeah,
you know, because they need the apparently need the
and
flyer miles.
And also coming up, the former Supreme Court Justice, and I keep wanting to say John Paul Young. Remember, he did the song
yeah.
"Love Is in the Air." John Paul Stevens.
See, I keep wanting to say John Paul Jones.
John Paul. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what he says, the anti-gun protesters. What they should be pushing for.
Mm-hmm.
Repeal of the Second Amendment. The leftist media went crazy over it. Shut up.
Yep. Yeah, quit
Shut
doing that. You're motivating
up.
People.
What are you doing?
You're motivating people.
And the whole, the census suit.
Mm-hmm.
California now stating that the census must not be accurate.
It cannot be.
Cannot be accurate. So that more on the way. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Just before last week's rains in the south and mid-south, and now again just before this week's stormy weather swings through.
There has been a flurry of fieldwork activity.
And Agriculture Department meteorologist Brad Rippey has some planting progress numbers from the south. And as we started the week, quite a bit of work had been done.
Look at Louisiana, where we see now 63% of the intended corn acreage planted. And just a week ago, that number was 8%. We also saw a big jump in the corn planting in Arkansas, going from 2% a week ago to a March 25th number of 18% of the acreage planted. Mississippi, no different, going from 6% to 28% planted.
In Texas, they've got 43% of their corn in the ground, but whether it's corn, sorghum, or rice planting,
it will be stalled as the rain sweeps eastward over the next several days.
Big rains up to 6 inches or more expected. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is a service of Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, there it is. Repeal the Second Amendment. The former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens.
Yeah.
That'll get some Civil War talk going, will it not?
Right, because this is different than the 150 members of, 150 lawmakers, you know, who basically
endorsed.
Were pushing to end gun sales. Well, this would be if you repealed the Second Amendment, then the federal government would have to go to your door and take the guns from your home. I mean, it would become unlawful to own a gun.
Remember, John Paul Stevens in the Heller case wrote that the Second Amendment was only to support a militia, not an individual right.
Right, yeah.
As I said back then, because we had talked about this back in 2008, you and I, we're working together for 3 years already at that point. Wow, time really flies. That seems like it was 10 years ago. Oh, it was. But the when remember, we read portions of it and said, how scary is that? How scary is that? That we, I think we probably mentioned John Paul Stevens and what he had said, that it is not an individual right. It was simply a right of the militia. That's ridiculous.
But it is
that
ridiculous.
That is a complete perversion if you know anything about history of the United States.
Because what would a modern militia would essentially be a branch of the government. It was anything. It was anything but that. I mean,
back
forming
then, yes.
A militia back then was about the individual. It started with the individual.
Well, and the other point is when we talk about, because it's always brought up, well, the number one reason, you know, that the number one reason for the Second Amendment is to protect ourselves from a tyrannical government.
Right.
Yes, but that you also have an individual right, God-given right, to protect yourself, whether it's a tyrannical government or a bear coming at you,
a threat,
or your neighbor coming at you, or any threat, you have that individual right. Mm-hmm. And that is so critically important. And the fact is, when somebody like John Paul Stevens, when he wrote about it that way, to me, they're being disingenuous. What they're saying is, now that's antiquated and you shouldn't have that.
Right.
That the state should be in control of everything, that you don't have an individual right to self-protection. You want dangerous thought? You want a dangerous mindset? It's that of John Paul Stevens.
Yeah.
That's a dangerous mindset when you start telling people in the United States of America that you don't have a personal right to self-protection. I say in the United States of America, it's dangerous anywhere in the world when you tell an individual that the state can control you to the point where you can't defend yourself against other threats that come at you. And when you're a totally, completely law-abiding citizen, too. That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
You're a law-abiding citizen, and they say, you can't be trusted. Well, you know something? You know why this nation is great today? This nation is great because we do trust the individual.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's great. We're a great nation. You want to know why we have American exceptionalism? It's because we trust the individual. It is the individual that we care about. It is the individual that we look at in the highest esteem, the individual and the individual rights that come from it, because society is built by individuals, by responsible, law-abiding individuals who understand that their role in the success of a society like the United States is as great as any police officer or any politician out there. And when you move away from that, that's extremely dangerous. No, you can't be trusted with it. Nah, there is no Second Amendment right. We, the people on the Hill, we, the people in the mansions, we, the people with our armed security living in our gated communities, we will tell you how to run your life. That is the ultimate in elitism. You want the ultimate of elitism? Right there, John Paul Stevens.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes. Yes, that is that you are not to be trusted, the individual. Because if you extrapolate that out, what are you talking about in terms of all the other rights? You repeal the Second Amendment, and all the other rights start to fall away.
Well, but if you believe in the morality that I don't have I don't have the right to protect myself, just right there, self-defense, you take that. So I don't have the right to do it, but then I really don't have the freedom of speech.
That's it.
Why would I have freedom of speech if I don't have freedom to protect myself?
Exactly. Exactly my point. Everything else just starts to fall away. 866-90-RUD-I, here's your forecast.
We've got a frontal boundary that's draped across the country from Texas all the way up to the northeast into Maine. And a slow mover, too, bringing several days of severe weather and heavy rain, over 5 inches in some areas of the south, and that can mean flooding. But you will need the windshield wipers today on a good portion of I-20 from Texas over to Georgia, I-55 northward out of New Orleans into St. Louis, I-65 Indianapolis down through Tennessee, I-70 from Indy over to Pittsburgh, I-90 and 81 in Ohio and New York. Those interstates are where we will see the heaviest rain today, and again, thunderstorms, and the National Weather Service is talking maybe some large hail, damaging winds, and isolated tornadoes along a good portion of the front, mainly in the south. In the west, showers for a good portion of Montana and Idaho with snow in the higher elevations. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Vision is over. Red Eye Radio.
He's there, Curly. I'm Gary McNamara. We're never going to drop that, are we?
Probably
that,
not.
Little line, the Age of Division is over.
Yeah.
We've all agreed. I was looking. I haven't found it yet. No overnight ratings out yet on Roseanne. And don't anybody call or tell me anything about it or email, because I DVR'd it last night. I was sleeping, so I didn't watch it, so.
I did hear they have zombies on the new show, because apparently zombies are in.
Now, what the interesting thing is, it was Sarah Gilbert that got this all started. She's the one that started contacting people. She didn't think anybody would want to do it.
Right. And you really kind of need to get the whole group back together. I mean, you need to, you know, the core of the family, you need to kind of be able to, you don't want to have to explain away everything when half of the cast is not there, you know, or the characters.
I'm hoping it's good, because I have read a lot of more liberal reviews of it that really don't like it. And again, I'm just expecting, and I think everybody understands what Roseanne was about. I don't think anybody's expecting that it's going to be a conservative bent show. It's just that Trump or other values that the Republicans may espouse will at least get a hearing. It'll at least be written in, and written in smartly, and not as the fact that if you hold that opinion that you're an outcast. Because it's pretty tough to make Roseanne the outcast on that show.
Yeah. You can't really do that.
And again, I may watch it and say, okay, I like the concept all along of what they were going to do, because it's gutsy, but they don't pull it together. I might end up saying that when I watch it today.
Mm-hmm.
I hope not. I hope it's good, because I think that, you know, the image that is given on the media is that everybody has more of a leftist spin. It's just natural that any other opinion that isn't there is viewed more, is portrayed more as an outcast point of view.
Yeah.
So just giving it a fair shot where, and as
it's
I said,
just a normal family conversation kind of thing.
And I saw Sarah Gilbert say, she goes, look, it's not about, the show's not about politics. It's about that family disagrees with politics, and they get into, you know, they get into arguments about it, and they tease each other about it.
Right.
Well, yeah. But they still, you know, they still love each other. And I was telling you, I said, you know, there must be a lot of love of those actors towards one another, because this is a very rare thing to happen.
Yeah, it is.
You think about it, and right. There must have been a heck of a lot of trust, knowing that how they were going to go into it, and knowing that really to bring another side, which is the Trump side, into any debate as being normal in a family in itself had to get pushback from somewhere.
Right, yeah.
And the fact that all the actors, because Sarah Gilbert has to be as liberal as can be.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But for her to say, no, no, this is what we should be doing. If we're going to be actors and we're going to portray, you know, a working class family, to sit there and pretend that we're all liberals, probably nobody is going to buy.
Right.
Is a sense of saying, look, we want to bring a sense of, in a comedy, we want to bring a sense of realism about what can happen in a real family.
I could see them bringing Home Improvement back, where Tim is now doing a TV show about doing flips, like Chip and Joanna Gaines do, right? So he's doing flip homes on TV, right? Instead of a Home Improvement,
right.
You know, yeah. Bob Vila kind of thing, he's doing a flip show on TV and with her.
With Al. Oh, not Al?
And Al might be a part of it as well. And you could, and then, of course, their sons are grown and have children of their own. So they're grandparents now. I could see that happening. If the writing were there, I could definitely see that show coming together.
Yeah, you know, because people have talked about Seinfeld. It's like impossible.
Because it
can't do Seinfeld.
I don't know that you could recreate that magic.
No, you can't.
You know, there's just, it's just not going to happen.
No.
It's, first of all, the sensibilities are different. You know, Home Improvement didn't really have a, you know, that kind of feel. Seinfeld had a really strong signature footprint in terms of the writing and the characters. You know, I mean, there's, and it was really kind of that time. You really couldn't move that on, you know, and update that for 2018. I just don't think you could. Because the writing, think about that. Some of the things that were, you know, some of the lines that came out of it, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, there's no way in 2018 that's going to play out.
You can't do that. No, you can't.
That whole episode, I'm still surprised it shows up in reruns. But a Home Improvement didn't have that same thing. I mean, you can kind of work around a lot of the things. In fact,
so you just,
Tim Allen could probably be a Trump supporter, and maybe his sons aren't. You know, necessarily. I mean, you really don't have to make it necessarily political.
No, you don't.
But there are things. There are certain shows that really were in their time, and you. I don't think because of today's sensibilities they would work. I mean, I'm just saying.
But who
getting past the network censors?
But you're missing the big question here for Home Improvement. Who replaces Wilson?
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
You think about. The because it was more, again, he was, the time he was given would be a minor character,
mm-hmm.
but he was a major portion of that show.
Yeah, sure. Right. So, adio, neighbor.
Yeah, I
mean, you know, when he made appearances, he would carry a little handheld picket fence thing that he would put in front of his. I mean, you know, it's not like he wouldn't reveal, but that was kind of the joke when he would come out. He would have that little, you know, piece of fence in front of his face so people would recognize him. He made that joke. You know, this is how people recognized me. But I think you could, I definitely think you could pull that show together. I mean, if you're talking about bringing, you know, shows back.
Friends, you couldn't.
No.
Nobody would buy it today.
Nope. Yeah, there are things that are just really kind of signatures of that time, I think, or just had those, you know, those lines where, okay, and the writing style, that was a lot different. With Roseanne, it really was about what? The middle class family?
Mm-hmm.
What every middle class family was. That's what it was always about.
The struggles that they had,
paying the bills and, you know, and the arguments and the serious moments and, you know, and lots of laughter. It was, I think, a reflection of a number of families in the Midwest, I'm sure. And so this is basically that all over again, updated. So whether it works or not, you know, that's up to the viewing public. But certainly the concept is, you know, plausible. And I'm totally with you on the cast. There's no doubt that they had confidence that Roseanne could make that happen, and they trusted her, you know, to lead that charge.
To enter that.
Yeah.
I did hear Sarah Gilbert say, she said, the thing that's interesting is that it's a lot easier when you've done a show, because that show came out, you know, started almost 30 years ago.
Right.
And so when I'm yelling at my sister, there's, in essence, 30 years of, even though we haven't been on for a long time, it's 30 years in my mind that I've been doing it, so it comes so natural to
you
working with these same people,
right?
You know, in that same relationship. So it'll be interesting to see what the, at least, like I said, it'll be, there's not many times where a new show comes out where I DVR it when I can't watch it, and so I did. And it'll be interesting to see what the ratings are for it, whether, you know, they like it. It'll be interesting to see what the liberal press has to say about it.
Yeah, because can you even get away with this much, right? Of, really, it's just a portrayal of a family. That might be the case for a number of families where the parents, or at least one parent, is, you know, this politically and more conservative. As they get older, especially.
Yeah, but I'm expecting to see how can Roseanne change from Roseanne to a Nazi?
No, that's,
she's a Nazi.
That's actually the only way you can approach it from the left. You know, we have to shame everything out of existence. The left does. They feel like they do.
And don't anybody email me, but I really wonder John Goodman's character, and I'd mentioned this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder where we know, for example, we know that the sister, I can't think of her name. We know that she's liberal.
Right.
We know that she's going to be liberal and that Roseanne's going to be a Trump supporter. The daughters, I don't know. I'm assuming Sarah Gilbert will be more liberal. I don't know where, you know, when they're having, if they're having these political arguments, is John Goodman just going to be sitting at the table, just shaking his head going like, oh man,
right.
You know, shut up. You know?
Right.
Which I could see.
Well, or a more populist and not really falling one side or the other, because sometimes, you know, it's, you have to pick out the one character that is what? The voice of reason.
Yeah.
Right? That's what
or
they...
Or will you two just shut up?
Yeah. Or, you know, I've had enough. I'm going to go have a beer on the porch or, you know, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, that's kind of the way that Dan was on the show. I mean, back in the day. You know, it was... A lot of it was between,
but
it was about the relationship between him and Roseanne.
Some of the greatest scenes, though, was, to me, looking back, and I can't identify a particular episode of Roseanne, but when he would get angry, when he really angry about
somebody. Well, John Goodman is really great.
Oh, yeah.
You put him in anything, it's going to make it better. You know, it's going to, he's one of those guys that, you know, that where if you're looking to give, you know, a show or a movie credibility, he's one of those moves, right?
Wasn't he
Morgan Freeman or John Goodman or, you know, one of those other well-respected.
Wasn't Goodman in the one with Denzel Washington?
Which one? Book of Eli?
No. The one of the devil being read, the spirit, the... Oh, I can't think of it. Remember, they were both police officers.
Was Goodman in that?
That's what I'm thinking. Was it Goodman who was in that one? I can't think of the name of it.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Remember how scary? I mean, that was a pretty scary movie. That was a good movie, though.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know why. I just thought maybe it was somebody else. Maybe it was just a larger person, and that's what I'm thinking. But he seems to have slimmed down. You know, he stopped drinking completely. He admitted alcoholic. Stopped drinking 8 years ago. Talked about when he was on the show and him and Roseanne used to go drinking.
Wow.
And she had a crush on him.
Yeah.
She admitted that. She finally admitted she had a crush on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she said, you know, John Goodman helped me when I was, you know, barfing into a, you know, bag because I was so drunk.
Mm.
But she confronted him way back then on his alcoholism, too.
Wow.
But apparently he quit drinking totally about 8 years ago.
Wow.
And he looks like he has lost a lot of weight, so.
Yeah.
But, he looks a little older. She doesn't look that much older to me.
No, she's aged pretty well. I don't know if she's had work done, but she's definitely...
No, I forgot. That's right. It is Hollywood, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, forgot. 866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL premium diesel fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The film I was thinking of with John Goodman and Denzel Washington was Fallen.
Okay.
1998.
Right.
It was a bust at the box office. I love the film. It was about a fallen angel, basically a demon who would transfer from one person and commit murders and transfer from one person to another just by touch.
Yeah.
So they were trying to follow him, and it keeps touching, and it was just killed at the box. I mean, it just did nothing. I think they didn't make back half of the budget, but I thought the film was great.
Hmm.
And John Goodman was in that, and I thought he was just tremendous in that film.
Following developments throughout the day out of China announcing that there was a meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Xi in China, and they, China, quoting Kim Jong-un in one of the statements, saying that North Korea pledges to basically do away with all their nukes. How that's going to be enforced, what kind of agreement might come from this kind of meeting, which took place over the last few days, remains to be seen. And also a promise that they will sit down with the United States, and we expect that to happen over the next couple of months.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.